Leaders are influencers, and it's nearly impossible to maximize your influence when you're being dragged down and distracted by crippling anxiety, overwhelming stress, and private doubts and fears. We're unlocking the secrets to being fully present, expanding our potential, and growing our wisdom. Welcome to the Calm and Confident Leader Podcast with your host, Jason Stonehouse. Jason is the founder and lead coach at Life in Process. He helps professionals and leaders conquer anxiety and fear so they can maximize their potential. And now, grab something to write with and engage in today's episode.
Hey, everybody. So happy to have you here. This is Jason. You know, emotions are a part of life, but there's a very common myth out there that actually hurts us as leaders when it comes to our emotions, our reactions, particularly emotions that are of the intense variety. Well, we're going to get into that today. We're going to talk all about emotions. I'm going to give you some really very, very practical things that you probably have never heard before when it comes to how emotions can be impacted. And so, but before I get to that, I wanted to remind you or let you know, if you don't know, that over at Facebook, that we actually have a Calm and Confident Leader page, as well as a Calm and Confident Leader group. And I tend to post a lot of content in there, as well as other leaders will post things in there, we'll comment, we'll get discussions going, we can carry on some of the conversations from here on the podcast over there as well. And so I would love to have you check us out over at Facebook. And if you're not on Facebook, then just continue, you know, subscribe to the podcast and continue to catch all of the great content here on the podcast. So today we're talking about emotions. And most people believe that emotions are not controllable or even predictable. And because of that, we often feel like victims to our own emotions. And so this is really the common myth that's out there when it comes to emotions, is that emotions are out of our control. Emotions can't even be predicted. It's just something happens or somebody says something and all of a sudden, you know, we're emoting and we're out of control. We're angry, we're hurt, we're upset, whatever it might be. And so and then really what happens is we feel like victims to our emotions. We feel like victims, like it's happening to us and there's nothing we can do. Now, I want to talk a little bit about this victim mentality because it's a really core concept that we talk about in our program. And that is that when there are situations that you think that you can't control, what happens typically is you just kind of suck it up and you say, well, that's just how it is. Or one of my most frustrating sayings that people say is, it is what it is. Like, what does that even mean? Anyway, but here's what I discovered about that. We tend to try to control things that are truly out of our control, while we ignore things that are actually inside of our control. Let me say that again. We tend to try to control things that are truly out of our control, while we ignore things that are actually inside of our control. So when we feel like our emotions are happening to us, then we feel helpless to be able to change them. Now, this is where this gets even stickier for us. If you're helpless to change your emotions, and if emotions are just something that happened to you, then as a leader, this is one of those areas where we feel like it's not my responsibility. I can't control it. I'm angry right now. I'm hurt. I'm frustrated. I'm dealing with this stuff and I'm trying to deal with it the best I can, but you know, I can't help the fact that I'm dealing with all of this. And so we're not responsible. We can't apologize. Sometimes we do. We say, oh, I'm apologizing. I'm so short with you. I'm just so frustrated. But that's not really taking responsibility for the emotion. And we even say things like in our culture, we say things like this. Have you ever heard somebody say, you made me so mad? Or when she said that, it just sent me into a depression for a week. Or when that decision was made, it made me feel so powerless. You see, in each of those examples, it was the fault or the responsibility of that other person or of the event, of the situation that happened. And that person said that thing or that event happened or that situation took place. And I couldn't help, this is what we're really saying, I couldn't help but feel these things. And in a sense, and you see this in marriages all the time, you make me so mad. So who's responsible for you being angry? They are, right? Because they made you so mad. And in some ways, that can feel good for a moment, right? To pass the blame onto somebody else and to maybe make them feel guilty or maybe make them change their behavior. But what it really does is you are sacrificing or you are surrendering your opportunity to have any impact or influence on your emotions. What you're saying is, it's all you, and I can't help it. It's all you. And so it adds to one more thing that you can't control. Now, as I said before, we try so hard as leaders to step into situations and even to people and try to change them or control them or change or control the situation. But when it comes to our emotions, we say, oh, I can't change it. I can't control it. You made me do this. You made me feel this way. So in each of those examples, it's directly caused by the situation or the other person. So we can't change it. We can't affect it. And therefore, we are not responsible for it. Now, this is particularly troubling when it comes to more intense emotions. Emotions like anxiety or anger or depression. See, what happens is they inevitably, those emotions inevitably force us that they inevitably force us so that we feel powerless and we should just take it. And what some leaders have done over the years, and I'll put myself in this camp too, is since we can't affect it, since we can't change the emotion, since what happens is we try to manage the emotion. So because you can't predict it and because you can't change it, you say, well, at least I'll try to manage the emotion. What do I mean by that? Well, we do things like when we're angry, we say, oh, I need to count to 10. And all you're doing is 1, 2, 3, right? And you're counting to 10 to do what? To calm yourself down. Or sometimes we, when we're feeling particularly stressed and the emotion is just making us feel so stressed and frustrated, we'll grab, these were popular maybe 10 years ago, it was like these stress balls. Have you ever heard of these? Maybe you have one on your desk. And it's just like this squishy ball and you just kind of squeeze it. And by squeezing it, it's supposed to relieve some of that stress. Some of us think, well, I need to go get a massage, or sometimes we'll go exercise and we think, oh, if I can just, you know, kind of do these things externally, then they will bring my emotion down. And so it's our way of managing the emotion. But you see, by the time you're managing the emotion, it's too late. The emotion's already out of the bag. And so now the best we can hope for is that we mitigate its impact on us. That we somehow mitigate the emotional difficulty that from ourselves, but more importantly, from the people in our world who we don't want to offend or push away or whatever else. And so that's the best we can hope for. But you see, the difference between stressed and anxious leaders versus calm and confident leaders is that calm and confident leaders understand something that very few others do when it comes to emotion. See, the difference between stressed out, anxious leaders versus calm and confident leaders is that calm and confident leaders understand this principle. We actually have the ability to predict our emotions and even shape our emotions. That's true. And I'm gonna prove it to you in just a second. We actually have the ability to predict our emotions and even shape them. That is really good news, is that you can have significant impact on your emotions before you even feel those emotions. What? Crazy talk, right? So that's the good news. You actually can have significant impact on your emotions before you even feel them. And so that means we can actually, drum roll please, take responsibility for our emotions. That's the key principle here, is I want to invite you to become a calm and confident leader. And one of the best ways that you can start rapidly moving down that path to becoming the kind of leader that you have always wanted to be is you need to learn to take responsibility for our emotions. Or as we say in our coaching program, we need to own our emotions. We need to own our emotions. So I'm going to give you three principles here, three tips, whatever you want to call them, three ways that you can begin to impact, affect, shape, predict, maybe even change your emotions. Okay, so here we go. Three things that'll help you. You might want to write these down. Number one, you want to start by naming your emotion. Name your emotion. See, simply by naming what you're feeling, what happens is you begin to step outside of that emotion. So again, this is not the third tip is going to actually help you before the emotion even comes. But when you start feeling the emotion right away, when you start feeling the emotion, this is not a management of the emotion. This is actually taking control of the emotion. And the way you do that is you name it. You step outside of the emotional state and you begin to work on yourself rather than be working in yourself. Because when you're in it, you're caught up in all the emotion, all the drama, you're caught up in all of that. If you can find a way to step out of it, now you can actually work on that emotional state rather than be stuck trying to survive it. Now, what do I mean by name your emotion? Well, I'm talking about, and one of the tools that we give our students in the Common Confident Leader coaching program is we give them actually an emotional, we call it a dashboard, that allows them to be able to look at different aspects of their emotion and really bring that in. And I can't get into the full deal because it's like an hour deal thing, but I'll give you a couple examples of naming your emotion. So one of the things we do is we give an assessment guide. It's part of the dashboard to our students. And part of that assessment guide just gives you a bunch of words that you can start to name your emotions. So you could name your emotions, say, you know, I'm feeling alienated or dejected, or I'm worried right now, or I'm disappointed. I feel threatened by what's going on here. I feel powerless. I feel overwhelmed. I feel flustered. I feel embarrassed. I feel paralyzed. That's a big one, right? So again, putting a name like that, you know, again, we're moving way beyond I'm happy, I'm sad, you know, I'm angry. Those are fine, but a lot of times they don't really help us name the emotion. We need to go a lot deeper, and we need to be able to identify, why am I sad? Why am I happy? Why am I angry? And that's going to really get you to that significant name, that, like those examples I just gave you. So by using that emotional word, we name the emotion. So I'm feeling overwhelmed. Well, now by doing that, I can look from the outside in at the emotion and say, okay, you're overwhelmed. Now I actually am beginning to tame the intensity of that emotion because I'm looking at it. I'm not in it. I'm not experiencing it to the same level. And so by naming the emotion, I am actually beginning to take ownership of that emotion so that I can begin to say, well, wonder why I'm feeling overwhelmed. And I wonder what I could do, or I wonder what I'm believing, or I wonder what I'm thinking that's actually causing this overwhelmed feeling. And maybe I could start to take some action to eliminate that emotion because I can delegate it. I can share the burden with a right-hand person in my life. I can, you know, so I can begin now to get on the solution side rather than living in the midst of the problem side of that emotion. Make sense? Again, I wish I had time to go into all of these in the way that we do in our program, but I'm just kind of giving you the flyover view. All right, so the first thing is name your emotion, and you will begin to get outside of the emotion so that you can begin working with it. Second principle or second tip on taking responsibility for your emotions is to know your drivers. Know your drivers. See, when you and I, we do this all the time. We have these negative self-talk that goes on in our brains. John Acuff wrote a book called Soundtracks, and so he calls them soundtracks, and he says there's broken soundtracks in our brains that are rehearsed and said, you know, for most of our lives, and because we have begun to believe these broken soundtracks in our brain, we operate or we act out of a broken soundtrack or a faulty driver or a faulty belief, as we talk about in our program. And so when you start to understand that negative self-talk that goes on in your minds, well, then you begin to realize, hey, I've got this set of things that, for me anyway, I'm a little sensitive about, or I'm insecure about, or I'm like kind of embarrassed, or I'm nervous about these particular things. Well, why that's so key is now when somebody steps on that area, when somebody says something that could be remotely translated and understood as that thing, we are going to get triggered. We are going to be, be impacted, and it's going to cause us to emote in certain ways. And so, number one, if you know what those drivers are, if you know what those vulnerability spaces are in you, then know that when somebody says something, you're likely overreacting to it because of your trigger. Now, if it's something that's not an insecurity of yours, you know, and you're still being affected, it's probably the person is being offensive. But I found that with so many of my clients, the things that we think are people speaking down to us or people offending us actually have a lot more to do with us than they do with them. And it's because we have these insecurities, these drivers, these broken soundtracks that have been playing in our brain for so long that we've believed them and we've internalized them. So how do we deal with it? Well, first of all, if you know your areas of sensitivity, you can be more sensitive to it and you can pay attention to it and maybe even build some boundaries around it so that you're not triggered, so that you can catch yourself. But obviously, the bigger issue, and you probably hear me alluding to this a lot in this podcast, is we need to get to the root. We need to get to what are those things that are causing that kind of impact in your life. What are those drivers? And we need to pay attention to them. But more importantly, we need to correct them. And so we need to begin to work on, and there's a number of tools that we use in our program that really help people, number one, identify what those faulty beliefs are, but then through this process of really rewiring our brain to understand what is the right or the true belief that is going to lead us to more positive outcomes. I'm sorry, that was a little more complex than I wanted it to be, but hopefully it made sense. So number one, name your emotion. Number two, know your drivers. And if you, and even if you just on that second one, even if you can just start identifying what are those vulnerabilities inside of you, it's going to take you a far distance. We may not be able to get to some of the other things, and maybe we'll do a podcast on the rewiring of faulty beliefs in the future. All right, here's the third thing, and this is really, I think, the game changer, and that is to change your interpretation. To change your interpretation. See, emotions happen because of the way we interpret events, conversations, comments. See, the reason you emote is you have interpreted what has happened or what that person said in a certain way. And because you've interpreted it in that certain way, you will now emote in that certain way. You say, how do you know that? Well, because somebody else can say the same thing to them, or you can say the same thing to somebody else, and they're not emoting the same way you are. You say, well, no, they're just more laid back. No. They interpreted what the person said in a very different way than the way you interpreted what the person said. They interpreted the event in a different way than the way you interpreted the event. And that's why they're not having such intense emotional reaction. They might be disappointed, but they're not having the intense emotional reaction that you're having based on the way that the two of you interpreted what happened. So another way to say that is it's the lens that we are looking at or listening to people, situations, events. It's the filter that our brains use to determine how we will emote. Now, here's where this is so genius, because if you could actually change your interpretation, you can actually change the way you emote. So if you want to change your emotions, change your interpretation. Let me say that again. If you want to change your emotions, change your interpretation. So this comes into maybe believing the best versus assuming the worst. When we assume the worst, then that becomes an interpretive lens that when somebody says something or when something happens, we're like, oh man, this is going to happen. This means this and this means that. And I'm trying to do my little Eeyore voice here. Thank you. Right. And we tend to assume the worst about a person, or we assume the worst about a situation. And when we do that, we are interpreting that way, and it's going to cause us to then emote differently. But if we choose to believe the best, that, hey, they didn't mean that. They probably meant this. Or even just to have the most generous interpretation of what something happened or somebody said will actually allow you to not have such intense emotions about those things. And you can actually get curious rather than react to what you're feeling. And that's really what a lot of emotions comes down to. Emotion is this reaction to a comment or an event or a situation rather than a response. And so if you can slow down, think about how am I interpreting what is going on right now, get in, understand what that filter is, make alternate interpretations. Now, actually, I can begin to respond rather than react, which is really one of the hallmarks of a calm and confident leader. So I hope those things have been helpful for you. Name your emotion, know your drivers, and change your interpretation, and you'll begin to see your emotions be shaped in some really good ways. Hey, listen, gang. I have seen so many of my clients experience breakthrough in our coaching program, and I would love to chat with you about it. And so reach out, let me know who you are, and allow me to assess what's happening for you and how the calm and confident leader can make a real difference in your life. And here's what I want you to do. I'm going to give you an email address that I would love for you to just email me. And it's lifeinprocess, all one word, LLC, lifeinprocess, LLC, @gmail.com. And I would love to be able to hear a little bit about your story and share with you some more information about the Calm and Confident Leader, especially our signature premier program, coaching program, that I know will make a difference in your life. So thanks so much for listening to today's episode of the Calm and Confident Leader. I really do hope it was helpful, and I would love it if you could leave us a review on wherever service you're listening to this podcast on, and please let other people know so that we can begin to spread the word and see more and more people become calm and confident leaders. Enjoy.